You're listening to Sunday Extra on RN. I'm Hugh Remington. The drumbeat of gun massacres in the United States, two on a single day this month, has drawn the usual offerings of thoughts and prayers and no realistic prospect of any significant reform. But in that numbing, all too regular rhetorical dance, something important is being overlooked. The American National Rifle Association, the NRA, is in trouble. For people longing for gun reform, the NRA has long been an impregnable barrier. Its money and its ruthless lobbying power have long made the NRA a powerful force in US politics. But now it is bleeding money, it is facing a drift in membership, and it's caught up in a power struggle in its own top ranks. And in recent days, US cable TV anchor Essie Karp, a former frontwoman for NRA advertising, announced she was having a change of heart.
Now, for years, as you might know, I've gone on television and made the case for the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. I've pointed out that criminals don't follow gun laws. And I've defended the NRA and its members, law-abiding gun owners like me who have nothing to do with mass shootings or violent gun crimes. I've done that because I am a gun owner and a gun rights advocate, and I believed it was true. But I am no longer an NRA member. Being right no longer feels righteous because in the wake of more mass shootings, acts of senseless violence that send innocent people running for their lives, leaving children, orphaned, loved ones dead on the ground, we must do something about guns.
Having a change of heart, US cable TV anchor and former NRA mum, Sarah, or Essie Karp. Now, Dr. Robert Spitzer is an historian of the American gun rights debate. He's the author of five books on the subject, including The Politics of Gun Control, now in its seventh edition. Bob Spitzer, welcome to RN.
Yes, good to be with you.
Now, you recently said the NRA has been in precipitous decline since 2016. From here in far off Australia, that hasn't been obvious. So what has been going on?
Well, they have run into what seems to be a nearly perfect storm of problems. And they began over two years ago, on a real high point. That is to say, they endorsed Donald Trump when many were not lining up behind him. He winds up winning the election, to most people's surprise. And of course, they back the winner as the result. And the Republicans, Trump's political party, retain control of Congress. And that means seems to mean good politics and political wins for them. But then a series of problems began to emerge, some of them long term. One was a serious money problem. Their sources of revenue have been declining, such as membership. In addition, there were a number of revelations of absurd spendthrift spending. The power behind the NRA or within the NRA is a man named Wayne LaPierre, and it was revealed that he had spent $275,000 on men's clothing in a store in Southern California and many other wasteful kinds of spending habits at a time when they couldn't afford it. And this blew up into a major leadership struggle where LaPierre forced out the then president of the NRA, a man named Oliver North. And that occurred right during the NRA's annual convention, so the timing couldn't be worse. Plus, they are under investigation by federal and state agencies. Congress is investigating a number of things. And they really took it on the chin, suffered political losses in the 2018 midterm elections, which occurred nationwide. And as a result, there were a lot of candidates who ran for and were elected to office strongly supportive of gun control. So supporting stronger gun control is no longer anathema to the Democrats, and things certainly do not look good for the NRA in the next 18 months.
So if Congress is investigating, does that indicate that the hold that the NRA has had over so many members of Congress is weakening?
Well, not exactly, because the key to the NRA's unique political strength really isn't money. They certainly raise and spend money. They spent a lot in the 2016 national elections here. But there is big money in politics all over the place, and they're not a particularly big spender compared to the mega money that is spent by billionaires, for example. It's really the strength of the NRA is in their highly motivated, loyal, zealous, grassroots supporters that exist all around the country, in liberal states and in conservative states. And they are people who will actually get actively involved in politics. Most Americans do not. They will write a letter, they'll go to a meeting, they'll voice their opinions publicly, they'll make life uncomfortable for office holders, and they can apply a great deal of pressure, and successfully, although less than I think people think. So those people are still out there, they're still loyal to the gun cause, but some of them are beginning to waver, and some traditional donors who have contributed money to the NRA have said, they're not going to give any more money until they clean up their act, and they're a long way from that.
So in your assessment, is this declining membership, people not giving their money to the NRA, is it being driven chiefly by a sense of disgust and dismay at the constant mass shootings, or is it more about personalities and profligacies of spending in the NRA itself that they simply think they just don't like the organization at the moment?
Well, it's hard to tell for sure, but both of those factors seem to be at play. I mean, they're sort of coming from different ends, right? I mean, the degree to which Americans have been appalled by the recent mass shootings is certainly notable and significant, although it's not new. It's a terrible thing to say. We've had, of course, awful mass shootings in the past where the public was angered and upset and wanted the government to do something, and nothing ultimately resulted. But there does seem to be a feeling that some things may happen at the national level, even if they are of limited scale, because there's more support than ever for stronger gun laws. And then on the other hand, the manifest corruption and kind of graft that's been exposed within the ranks of the NRA has also been discouraging for, I think, some members and former members. And both of those things, I think, are hurting them. Over and above the problems, some of which, of course, are their own fault.
So when you look at the prospects for significant gun reform, looking at it from this distance on the other side of the Pacific, it seems that, you know, the major reform that's happened in the Trump period has been the banning of so-called bump stocks after the Las Vegas massacre. These are pieces of attachments, essentially, that convert a semi-automatic into effectively an automatic weapon. But even after that went through, it didn't stop massacres going on. And the talk now after the latest massacres is really around the fringes, like perhaps banning 100-round ammunition drums that were used in Dayton, Ohio, that kind of thing. Is there any prospect of any substantial root and branch reform to gun laws in the U.S.?
Well, I'm not sure root changes, no. Branch changes, perhaps, yes. Two other ideas that are spreading in their popularity in the states and that could see enactment in Congress at the federal level, depending on, frankly, what President Trump does. He seems to be showing some interest in two measures in particular. One is red flag laws, as they are called, which allows a person who, a spouse, for example, who believes that the spouse or the person they're living with poses an imminent threat of violence, can go to the local police. The police can act to remove the guns temporarily from the home, hold a hearing to determine if they should be kept away or not. It isn't a huge change, but it would be a way to get a handle on some of the extreme violence and familial violence, indeed, that is often related to gun violence. And also uniform background checks, because even today, roughly a quarter of all gun sales in America occur without any background checks because none are required if a sale occurs between private individuals. And that's how many gun exchanges and sales occur. So doing those two things would be, I think, politically significant. Policy terms would be a little bit helpful, and they might help knock down the idea that new gun laws are beyond reach.
Now, in Australia and now most recently in New Zealand, there was a move to ban assault rifles, seeing that they are the preferred weapon of mass shooters. It appears there's an argument over tactics in the United States as to whether to focus on assault rifles is the way to go for the gun control lobby there. What is the argument there? Why would you not argue for a ban on assault rifles?
Well, there are a couple of kinds of problems. I mean, it certainly is a position that is justifiable, I think, but there are some problems. One is that it takes focus away from the larger fact that about 80% of all gun crimes are committed with handguns, not with assault weapons. Assault weapons certainly appear in a disproportionate way in mass shootings, but mass shootings represent, I hate to say the word only, but only about 1% of the gun murders that occur in America every year. I mean, they're terrible events. I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but one argument is it really is taking your eye away from the ball of where most gun mayhem and how most of it occurs, which is handguns. There is also a practical problem partly because of gun manufacturers, it's often difficult to distinguish an assault rifle, let's say, from other types of semi-automatic weapons that hunters might use, for example. I mean, there are ways to parse these things, but critics point out that really it's not a meaningful difference. And so this kind of legislation just isn't likely to be ineffective, won't get at the major problems that exist, and essentially distracts attention from other possible remedies, whether that means handguns or other kinds of things.
Ultimately, of course, in the United States, the Constitution is protected and defended by the Supreme Court. As the Supreme Court is configured, is there any possibility that there could be any reviewing of what the meaning might be of having a right to bear arms within a well-regulated militia, which is the basis for these Second Amendment justifications for carrying weapons?
Well, it's important to point out first that the Supreme Court and the court system throughout America has generally upheld constitutional challenges to gun laws under the individual rights interpretation of the Second Amendment that the Supreme Court handed down just 11 years ago. But there is reason to believe, especially with the appointment of ultra-conservative judges in the federal court system by President Trump and approved by the Republican Senate, that some of these very conservative legal people, perhaps many of them, want to expand gun rights and are looking for a new case whereby they could expand gun rights that would make it more difficult for existing gun laws to be held as constitutional. Now, up until now, several states, I believe seven states of the 50 in the U.S., have assault weapons bans on the books. And they have been challenged in the courts, but have all been upheld. Now, would a new, more conservative Supreme Court decide that maybe assault weapons bans are not constitutional under the Second Amendment after all? It could well be. So that is one disturbing kind of counter trend to the otherwise prevalent trend of supporting more gun laws.
Fascinating to talk to you. Robert Spitzer, author of, among other things, The Politics of Gun Control.